the 24th of August, St. Bartholomew's Day. This morning was proclaimed the peace between us and the states of the United Provinces, and also of the King of France and Denmark, and in the afternoon the proclamations were printed and came out, and at night the bells rung, but no bonfires that I hear of anywhere, partly from the dearness of firing, but principally from the little content most people have in the peace. All the morning at the office, at noon dined and creed with me, at home. After dinner we to a play, and there saw the Cardinal at the King's house, wherewith I am mightily pleased, but above all with Beck Marshall. But it is pretty to observe how I look up and down for, and did espy Nip, but durst not own it to my wife that I saw her, for fear of angering her, who doth not like my kindness to her. And so I was forced not to take notice of her, and so homeward, leaving creed at the temple, and my belly now full with plays that I do intend to bind myself to see no more till Michaelmas. So with my wife to Mile End, and there drank of Bide's ale, and so home, most of our discourse about our keeping a coach the next year, which pleases my wife mightily, and if I continue as able as now, it will save us money. This day came a letter from the Duke of York to the board, to invite us, which is as much as to fright us, into the lending the king money, which is a poor thing and most dishonourable, and shows in what a case we are at the end of the war to our neighbours. And the king doth now declare publicly to give 10% to all lenders, which makes some think that the Dutch themselves will send over money and lend it upon our public faith, the Act of Parliament. So home, and to my office, wrote a little, and then home to supper and to bed. The 25th of August, Lord's Day. Up and to church, and thence home, and Pelling comes by invitation to dine with me, and much pleasant discourse with him. After dinner away by water to Whitehall, where I landed Pelling, who is going to his wife, where she is in the country at Parson's Green, and myself to Westminster, and there at the Swan I did Bezar Frank, and to the parish church, thinking to see Betty Mitchell, and did stay an hour in the crowd, thinking, by the end of a nose that I saw, that it had been her, but at last the head turned towards me, and it was her mother, which vexed me, and so I back to my boat, which had broke one of her oars in rowing, and had now fastened it again, and so I up to Putney, and there stepped into the church to look upon the fine people there, whereof there is great store, and the young ladies, and so walked to Barn Elms, whither I sent Russell, reading of Mr. Boyle's Hydrostatics, which are of infinite delight. I walked in the elms a good while, and then to my boat and leisurely home, with great pleasure to myself, and there supped and Will Hewer with us, with whom a great deal of good talk touching the office, and so to bed. The 26th of August. Up and greeting came, and I reckoned with him for his teaching of my wife and me upon the flageolet to this day, and so paid him off, having as much as he can teach us. Then to the office, where we sat upon a particular business all the morning, and my Lord Anglesey with us, who, and my Lord Brunker, do bring us news how my Lord Chancellor's seal is to be taken away from him today. The thing is so great and sudden to me that it put me into a very great admiration what should be the meaning of it, and they do not own that they know what it should be, but this is certain, that the king did resolve it on Saturday, and did yesterday send the Duke of Albemarle, the only man fit for those works, to him for his purse, to which the Chancellor answered that he received it from the king, and would deliver it to the king's own hand, and so civilly returned the Duke of Albemarle without it. And this morning my Lord Chancellor is to be with the king, to come to an end in that business. After sitting, we rose, and my wife being gone abroad with Mistress Turner to her washing at the Whitster's, I dined at Sir William Batten, where Mr. Borman was, who came from Whitehall, who tells us that he saw my Lord Chancellor come in his coach with some of his men, without his seal, to Whitehall to his chamber. And thither the King and Duke of York came and stayed together alone an hour or more. And it is said that the King doth say that he will have the Parliament meet, and that it will prevent much trouble by having of him out of their envy, by his place being taken away, for that all their envy will be at him. It is said also that my Lord Chancellor answers that he desires he may be brought to his trial, if he have done anything to lose his office, and that he will be willing, and is most desirous, to lose that and his head both together. Upon what terms they parted nobody knows, but the Chancellor looked sad, he says. Then in comes Sir Richard Ford, and says he hears that there is nobody more presses to reconcile the King and Chancellor than the Duke of Albemarle, and Duke of Buckingham, the latter of which is very strange, not only that he who was so lately his enemy should do it, but that this man, that but the other day was in danger of losing his own head, should so soon come to be a mediator for others. It shows a wise government. They all say that he is but a poor man, not worth above £3,000 a year in land, but this I cannot believe, and all do blame him for having built so great a house, till he had got a better estate. Having dined Sir John Minnis and I to Whitehall, where we could be informed in no more than we were told before, nobody knowing the result of the meeting but that the matter is suspended. So I walked to the King's Playhouse, there to meet Sir William Penn, and we saw The Surprisal, a very mean play, I thought, or else it was because I was out of humour, and but very little company in the house. But there Sir William Penn and I had a great deal of discourse with Mal, who tells us that Nell is already left by my Lord Buckhurst, and that he makes sport of her, and swears she hath had all she could get of him, and Hart, her great admirer, now hates her, and that she is very poor and hath lost my Lady Castlemaine, who was her great friend also. But she is come to the house, but is neglected by them all. Thence with Sir William Penn home, and I to my office, where late about business, and then home to supper and so to bed. The 27th of August. Up, and am invited betimes to be godfather tomorrow to Captain Poole's child, with my Lady Penn and Lady Batten, which I accepted out of complaisance to them. And so to the office, where we sat all the morning, at noon, dined at home, and then my wife and I with Sir William Penn to the New Exchange, set her down, and he and I to St. James's, where Sir John Minnis and William Batten and we waited upon the Duke of York, but did little business. And he, I perceive, his head full of other business, and of late hath not been very ready to be troubled with any of our business. Having done with him, Sir John Minnis, William Batten and I to Whitehall, and there hear how it is like to go well enough with my Lord Chancellor, that he is like to keep his seal, desiring that he may stand his trial in Parliament if they will accuse him of anything. Here Sir John Minnis and I, looking upon the pictures, and Mr. Chiffinch's being by, did take us of his own accord into the King's closet to show us some pictures, which indeed is a very noble place, and exceeding great variety of brave pictures and the best hands. I could have spent 3 or 4 hours there well, and we had great liberty to look, and Chiffinch seemed to take pleasure to show us and commend the pictures. Having done here, I to the Exchange, and there find my wife gone with Sir William Penn, so I to visit Colonel Fitzgerald, who hath been long sick at Woolwich, where most of the officers and soldiers quartered there since the Dutch being in the river have died or been sick, and he among the rest. And by the growth of his beard and grey hair I did not know him. His desire to speak with me was about the late command for my paying no more pensions for Tangier. Thence home, and there did business, and so in the evening home to supper and to bed. This day Mr. Pierce, the surgeon, was with me, and tells me how this business of my Lord Chancellor's was certainly designed in my Lady Castlemaine's chamber, and that when he went from the King on Monday morning, she was in bed, though about 12 o'clock, and ran out in her smock into her aviary, looking into Whitehall Garden, and thither her woman brought her her nightgown, and stood joying herself at the old man's going away. And several of the gallants of Whitehall, of which there was many staying to see the Chancellor return, did talk to her in her birdcage, among others Blankford, telling her she was the bird of paradise. The 28th of August. Up and stayed undressed till my tailor's boy did mend my vest, in order to my going to the christening anon. then out and to Whitehall to attend the council by their order, with an answer to their demands touching our advice for the paying off of the seamen, when the ships shall come in, which answer is worth seeing, showing the badness of our condition. There, when I came, I was forced to stay till past 12 o'clock in a crowd of people in the lobby, expecting the hearing of their great cause of Alderman Barker against my Lord Deputy of Ireland for his ill usage in his business of land there. But the King and Council sat so long as they neither heard them nor me, so when they rose I into the house and saw the King and Queen at dinner, and heard a little of their violins' music. And so home, and there to dinner, and in the afternoon with my Lady Batten, Penn and her daughter, and my wife to Mistress Poole's, where I mighty merry among the women, and christened the child, a girl, Elizabeth, which, though a girl, yet my Lady Batten would have me to give the name. After christening come Sir William Batten, William Penn, and Mr. Lowther, and mighty merry there, and I forfeited for not kissing the two godmothers presently after the christening, before I kissed the mother, which made good mirth. And so, anon, away, and my wife and I took coach and went round twice Bartholomew Fair, which I was glad to see again, after 2 years missing it by the plague. And so home and to my chamber a little, and so to supper and to bed. The 29th of August. Up and Mr. Moore comes to see me, and among other things, tells me that my Lord Crewe and his friends take it very ill of me, that my Lord Sandwich's sea fee should be retrenched, and so reported from this office, and I gave them no notice of it. The thing, though I know to be false, at least that nothing went from our office towards it, yet it troubled me, and therefore, after the office rose, I went and dined with my Lord Crewe, and before dinner I did enter into the discourse and laboured to satisfy, but found, though he said little, yet that he was not yet satisfied. But after dinner did pray me to go and see how it was, whether true or no, did tell me, if I was not their friend they could trust to nobody, and that he did not forget my service and love to my lord and adventures for him in dangerous times, and therefore would not willingly doubt me now, but yet asked my pardon if, upon this news, he did begin to fear it. This did mightily trouble me, so I away thence to Whitehall, but could do nothing, so home, and there wrote all my letters, and then in the evening to Whitehall again, and there met Sir Richard Brown, clerk to the Committee for Retrenchments, who assured me no one word was ever yet mentioned about my lord's salary. This pleased me, and I to Sir George Carteret, who I found in the same doubt about it, and assured me he saw it in our original report, my lord's name with the discharge against it. This, though I know to be false, or that it must be a mistake in my clerk. I went back to Sir Richard Brown, and got a sight of their paper, and find how the mistake arose, by the ill copying of it out for the council from our paper sent to the Duke of York, which I took away with me and showed Sir George Carteret, and thence to my Lord Crewe, and the mistake ended very merrily and to all our contents, particularly my own. And so home and to the office, and then to my chamber late, and so to supper and to bed. I find at Sir George Carteret's that they do mightily joy themselves in their hopes of my Lord Chancellor's getting over this trouble, and I make them believe, and so indeed I do believe he will, that my Lord Chancellor is become popular by it. I find by all hands that the court is at this day all to pieces, every man of a faction of one sort or other, so as it is to be feared what it will come to. But that pleases me is, I hear tonight that Mr. Brunker is turned away yesterday by the Duke of York, for some bold words he was heard by Colonel Worden to say in the garden the day the Chancellor was with the King, that he believed the King would be hectored out of everything. For this, the Duke of York, who all say hath been very strong for his father-in-law at this trial, hath turned him away, and everybody, I think, is glad of it. For he was a pestilent rogue, an atheist, that would have sold his king and country for sixpence almost, so covetous and wicked a rogue he is by all men's report. But one observed to me that there never was the occasion for men's holding their tongue at court, and everywhere else as there is at this day, for nobody knows which side will be uppermost. The 30th of August. Up and to Whitehall, where at the council chamber I hear Barker's business is like to come to a hearing today, having failed the last day. I, therefore, to Westminster, to see what I could do in my chequer business about Tangier, and finding nothing to be done, returned, and in the lobby stayed till almost noon, expecting to hear Barker's business, but it was not called, and so I came away. Here I met with Sir George Downing, who tells me of Sir William Penn's offering to lend £500, and I tell him of my £300, which he would have me to lend upon the credit of the latter part of the act, saying that by that means my 10% will continue to me the longer, but I understand better, and will do it upon the £380,000 which will come to be paid the sooner, there being no delight in lending money now, to be paid by the King 2 years hence. But here he and Sir William Doyley were attending the council as commissioners for sick and wounded and prisoners, and they told me their business, which was to know how we shall do to release our prisoners, for it seems the Dutch have got us to agree in the treaty, as they fool us in anything, that the diet of the prisoners on both sides shall be paid for before they be released, which they have done, knowing ours to run high, they having more prisoners of ours than we have of theirs, so that they are able and most ready to discharge that debt of theirs. But we are neither able nor willing to do that of ours, the debt of those in Zealand only, amounting to above £5,000, for men taken in the King's own ships, besides others taken in merchantmen, which expect, as is usual, that the King should redeem them. But I think he will not, by what Sir George Downing says. This our prisoners complain of there, and say in their letters which Sir George Downing showed me, that they have made a good fight, that they should be taken in the service of the King, and the King not pay for their victuals while prisoners for him. But so far they are from doing thus with their men, as we do to discourage ours, that I find in the letters of some of our prisoners there, which he showed me, that they have with money got our men that they took to work and carry their ships home for them, and they have been well rewarded and released when they came into Holland, which is done like a noble, brave, and wise people. Having stayed out my time that I thought fit for me to return home, I home, and there took coach, and with my wife to Walthamstow, to Sir William Penn's by invitation, the first time I have been there, and there find him and all their guests, of our office only, at dinner, which was a very bad dinner, and everything suitable, that I never knew people in my life that make their flutter, that do things so meanly. I was sick to see it, but was merry at some ridiculous humours of my Lady Batten, who, as being an ill-bred woman, would take exceptions at anything anybody said, and I made good sport at it. After dinner into the garden and wilderness, which is like the rest of the house, nothing in order nor looked after. By and by comes news that my Lady Viner was come to see Mistress Lowther, which I was glad of, and was all the pleasure I had here, to see her, which I did, and saluted her, and find is pretty, though not so eminently so as people talked of her, and of very pretty carriage and discourse. I sat with them and her an hour, talking and pleasant, and then slunk away alone without taking leave, leaving my wife there to come home with them, and I, to Bartholomew Fair to walk up and down, and there, among other things, find my Lady Castlemaine at a puppet play, Patient Grizzle, and the street full of people expecting her coming out. I confess I did wonder at her courage to come abroad, thinking the people would abuse her, but they, silly people, do not know her work she makes, and therefore suffered her with great respect to take coach, and she away without any trouble at all, which I wondered at, I confess. I only walked up and down, and among others saw Tom Pepys the turner, who hath a shop, and I think lives in the fair when the fair is not. I only asked how he did as he stood in the street, and so up and down, sauntering till late, and then home, and there discoursed with my wife of our bad entertainment today, and so to bed. I met Captain Cock today at the council chamber, and took him with me to Westminster, who tells me that there is yet expectation that the Chancellor will lose the seal, and that he is sure the King hath said it to him who told it him, and he fears we shall be soon broke in pieces, assures me that there have been high words between the Duke of York and Sir William Coventry, for his being so high against the Chancellor, so as the Duke of York would not sign some papers that he brought, saying that he could not endure the sight of him, and that Sir William Coventry answered that what he did was in obedience to the King's commands, and that he did not think any man fit to serve a prince that did not know how to retire and live a country life. This is all I hear. The 31st of August. At the office all the morning, where by Sir William Penn I do hear that the seal was fetched away to the King yesterday from the Lord Chancellor, by Secretary Morris, which puts me into a great horror to have it done after so much debate and confidence that it would not be done at last. When we rose, I took a turn with Lord Brunker in the garden, and he tells me that he hath of late discoursed about this business with Sir William Coventry, who he finds is the great man in the doing this business of the Chancellor's, and that he doth persevere in it, though against the Duke of York's opinion, to which he says that the Duke of York was once of the same mind, and if he had thought fit since for any reason to alter his mind, he hath not found any to alter his own, and so desires to be excused, for it is for the King's and kingdom's good. And it seems that the Duke of York himself was the first man that did speak to the King of this, though he hath since altered his mind. And that William Coventry did tell the Duke of York that he was not fit to serve a prince that did not know how to retire and live a private life, and that he was ready for that, if it be his and the King's pleasure. After having wrote my letters at the office in the afternoon, I in the evening to Whitehall to see how matters go, and there I met with Mr. Ball of the Excise Office, and he tells me that the seal is delivered to Sir Orlando Bridgeman, the man of the whole nation that is the best spoken of and will please most people, and therefore I am mighty glad of it. He was then at my Lord Arlington's, whither I went expecting to see him come out, but stayed so long, and Sir William Coventry coming thither, whom I had not a mind should see me there idle upon a post-night, I went home without seeing him. But he is there with his seal in his hand. So I home, took up my wife, whom I left at Unthanks, and so home, and after signing my letters, to bed. This day, being dissatisfied with my wife's learning so few songs of good groom, I did come to a new bargain with him, to teach her songs at so much, viz. 10 shillings a song, which she accepts of, and will teach her. September 1667, the 1st, Lord's Day. Up and betimes by water from the tower, and called at the Old Swan for a glass of strong water, and sent word to have little Mitchell and his wife come and dine with us today. And so, taking in a gentleman and his lady that wanted a boat, I to Westminster, setting them on shore at Charing Cross, I to Mistress Martin's, where I had 2 pair of cuffs which I bespoke, and there did sit and talk with her, and no mass, Ella having achaos upon her. And here I did see her little girl, my goddaughter, which will be pretty. And there, having stayed a little, I away to Creed's chamber, and when he was ready, away to Whitehall, where I met with several people and had my fill of talk. Our new Lord Keeper, Bridgeman, did this day the first time attend the King to chapel with his seal. Sir Hugh Chumley tells me there is hopes that the women also will have a rout, and particularly that my Lady Castlemaine is coming to a composition with the King to be gone. But how true this is, I know not. Blanquefort is made privy purse to the Duke of York. The Attorney General is made Chief Justice in the room of my Lord Bridgeman. The Solicitor General is made Attorney General, and Sir Edward Turner made Solicitor General. It is pretty to see how strange everybody looks, nobody knowing whence this arises, whether from my Lady Castlemaine, Bab May and their faction, or from the Duke of York, notwithstanding his great appearance of defence of the Chancellor, or from Sir William Coventry and some few with him, but greater changes are yet expected. So, home by water to dinner, where comes Pelling and young Mitchell and his wife, whom I have not seen a great while, poor girl. And then comes Mr. Howe, and all dined with me very merry, and spent all the afternoon, Pelling, Howe, I and my boy singing of Locke's response to the 10 Commandments, which he hath set very finely, and was a good while since sung before the King and spoilt in the performance, which occasioned his printing them for his vindication, and are excellent good. They parted in the evening, my wife and I, to walk in the garden, and there scolded a little, I being doubtful that she had received a couple of fine pinners, one of Point de Gain, which I find she hath from someone or other of a present. But on the contrary, I find she hath bought them for me to pay for them, without my knowledge. This doth displease me much, but yet doth so much please me better than if she had received them the other way, that I was not much angry, but fell to other discourse. And so to my chamber and got her to read to me, for saving of my eyes. And then, having got a great cold, I know not how, I to bed and lay ill at ease all the night. The 2nd of September. This day is kept in the city as a public fast for the fire this day 12 months. But I was not at church, being commanded with the rest to attend the Duke of York, and therefore with Sir John Minnis to St. James's, where we had much business before the Duke of York, and observed all things to be very kind between the Duke of York and William Coventry, which did mightily joy me. When we had done, Sir William Coventry called me down with him to his chamber, and there told me that he is leaving the Duke of York's service, which I was amazed at, but he tells me that it is not with the least unkindness on the Duke of York's side, though he expects, and I told him he was in the right, it will be interpreted otherwise, because done just at this time. But, says he, I did desire it a good while since, and the Duke of York did with much entreaty grant it, desiring that I would say nothing of it that he might have time and liberty to choose his successor, without being importuned for others, whom he should not like. And that he hath chosen Mr. Wren, which I am glad of, he being a very ingenious man, and so William Coventry says of him, though he knows him little, but particularly commends him for the book he writ in answer to Harrington's Oceana, which for that reason I intend to buy. He tells me the true reason is that he, being a man not willing to undertake more business than he can go through, and being desirous to have his whole time to spend upon the business of the treasury and a little for his own ease, he did desire this of the Duke of York. He assures me that the kindness with which he goes away from the Duke of York is one of the greatest joys that ever he had in the world. I use some freedom with him, telling him how the world hath discourse of his having offended the Duke of York about the late business of the Chancellor. He doth not deny it, but says that perhaps the Duke of York might have some reason for it, he opposing him in a thing wherein he was so earnest, but tells me that notwithstanding all that, the Duke of York doth not now, nor can, blame him, for he tells me that he was the man that did propose the removal of the Chancellor, and that he did still persist in it, and at this day publicly owns it, and is glad of it, but that the Duke of York knows that he did first speak of it to the Duke of York, before he spoke to any mortal creature besides, which was fair dealing, and that the Duke of York was then of the same mind with him, and did speak of it to the King, though since, for reasons best known to himself, he was afterward altered. I did then desire to know what was the great matter that grounded his desire of the Chancellor's removal. He told me many things not fit to be spoken, and yet not anything of his being unfaithful to the King. But instar omnium he told me that while he was so great at the council board, and in the administration of matters, there was no room for anybody to propose any remedy to what was amiss, or to compass anything, though never so good for the kingdom, unless approved of by the Chancellor, he managing all things with the greatness which now will be removed, that the King may have the benefit of others' advice. I then told him that the world hath an opinion that he hath joined himself with my Lady Castlemaine's faction in this business. He told me he cannot help it, but says they are in an error. But for first, he will never, while he lives, truckle under anybody or any faction, but do just as his own reason and judgment directs. And when he cannot use that freedom, he will have nothing to do in public affairs. But then he added that he never was the man that ever had any discourse with my Lady Castlemaine, or with others from her, about this or any public business, or ever made her a visit, or at least not this 12 month, or been in her lodgings but when called on any business to attend the King there, nor hath had anything to do in knowing her mind in this business. He ended all with telling me that he knows that he that serves a prince must expect and be contented to stand all fortunes, and be provided to retreat, and that he is most willing to do whenever the King shall please. And so we parted. He setting me down out of his coach at Charing Cross, and desired me to tell Sir William Penn what he had told me of his leaving the Duke of York's service, that his friends might not be the last that know it. I took a coach and went homeward, but then turned again and to Whitehall, where I met with many people, and among other things do learn that there is some fear that Mr. Brunker is got into the King's favour, and will be cherished there, which will breed ill will between the King and Duke of York, he lodging at this time in Whitehall since he was put away from the Duke of York, and he is great with Bab May, my Lady Castlemaine, and that wicked crew. But I find this denied by Sir George Carteret, who tells me that he is sure he hath no kindness from the King, that the King, at first, indeed, did endeavour to persuade the Duke of York from putting him away, but when, besides this business of his ill words concerning His Majesty in the business of the Chancellor, he told him that he hath had a long time a mind to put him away for his ill offices done between him and his wife, the King held his peace and said no more, but wished him to do what he pleased with him, which was very noble. I met with Fenn, and he tells me, as I do hear from some others, that the business of the Chancellor's had proceeded from something of a mistake, for the Duke of York did first tell the King that the Chancellor had a desire to be eased of his great trouble, and that the King, when the Chancellor came to him, did wonder to hear him deny it, and the Duke of York was forced to deny to the King that ever he did tell him so in those terms. But the King did answer that he was sure that he did say some such thing to him. But, however, since it had gone so far, did desire him to be contented with it, as a thing very convenient for him, as well as for himself, the King, and so matters proceeded as we find. Now it is likely the Chancellor might some time or other, in a compliment or vanity, say to the Duke of York that he was weary of this burden, and I know not what, and this comes of it. Some people, and myself among them, are of good hope from this change, that things are reforming, but there are others that do think it no, but that it is a hit of chance, as all other our greatest matters are, and that there is no general plot or contrivance in any number of people what to do next, though I believe Sir William Coventry may, in himself, have further designs. And so that though other changes may come, yet they shall be accidental and laid upon no good principles of doing good. Mr. May showed me the King's new buildings in order to their having of some old sails for the closing of the windows this winter. I dined with Sir George Carteret, with whom dined Mr. Jack Ashburnham and Dr. Creton, who I observed to be a most good man and humble. In discourse at dinner concerning the change of men's humours and fashions touching meats, Mr. Ashburnham told us that he remembers since the only fruit in request, and eaten by the King and Queen at table as the best fruit, was the Catherine pear, though they knew at that time other fruits of France and our own country. After dinner comes in Mr. Townsend, and there I was witness of a horrid rating which Mr. Ashburnham, as one of the grooms of the King's bedchamber, did give him for want of linen for the King's person, which he swore was not to be endured, and that the King would not endure it, and that the King his father would have hanged his wardrobe man, should he have been served so. The King having at this day no handkerchiefs, and but three bands to his neck, he swore. Mr. Townsend answered want of money and the owing of the linen draper £5,000, and that he hath of late got many rich things made, beds and sheets and saddles, and all without money, and that he can go no further. But still this old man, indeed like an old loving servant, did cry out for the King's person to be neglected. But when he was gone, Townsend told me that it is the grooms taking away the King's linen at the quarter's end, as their fees, which makes this great want. For whether the King can get it or no, they will run away at the quarter's end with what he hath had, let the King get more as he can. All the company gone, Sir George Carteret and I to talk, and it is pretty to observe how already he says that he did always look upon the Chancellor indeed as his friend, though he never did do him any service at all, nor ever got anything by him, nor was a man apt, and that I think is true, to do any man any kindness of his own nature, though I do know he was he that was believed of all the world to be the greatest support of Sir George Carteret with the King of any man in England. But so little is now made of it. He observes that my Lord Sandwich will lose a great friend of him, And I think so too, my Lord Hinchingbroke, being about a match calculated purely out of respect to my Lord Chancellor's family. By and by, Sir George Carteret and Townsend and I, to consider of an answer to the Commissioners of the Treasury about my Lord Sandwich's profits in the wardrobe, which seem, as we make them, to be very small, not £1,000 a year, but only the difference in measure which he buys at, and delivers out to the king, and then sixpence in the pound from the tradesman for what money he receives of him. But this, it is believed, these commissioners will endeavour to take away. From him I went to see a great match at tennis between Prince Rupert and one Captain Cook, against Bab May and the elder Chichley, where the king was and the court, and it seems are the best players at tennis in the nation. But this puts me in mind of what I observed in the morning, that the king, playing at tennis, had a steel yard carried to him, and I was told it was to weigh him after he had done playing. And at noon Mr. Ashburnham told me that it is only the king's curiosity, which he usually hath, of weighing himself before and after his play, to see how much he loses in weight by playing, and this day he lost 4.5 pounds. Thence home, and took my wife out to Mile End Green, and there drank, and so home, having a very fine evening. Then home, and I to Sir William Batten and William Penn, and there discoursed of Sir William Coventry's leaving the Duke of York, and Mr. Wren succeeding him. They told me both seriously that they had long cut me out for secretary to the Duke of York, if ever William Coventry left him, which, agreeing with what I have heard from other hands heretofore, doth make me not only think that something of that kind hath been thought on, but doth comfort me to see that the world hath such an esteem of my qualities, as to think me fit for any such thing, though I am glad with all my heart that I am not so, for it would never please me to be forced to the attendance that would require, and leave my wife and family to themselves, as I must do in such a case, thinking myself now in the best place that ever man was in to please his own mind in, and therefore I will take care to preserve it. So to bed, my cold remaining, though not so much, upon me. This day Nell, an old tall maid, came to live with us, a cook-maid recommended by Mr. Battaglia. The 3rd of September. All the morning, business at the office, dined at home, then in the afternoon set my wife down at the Exchange, and I to St. James's, and there attended the Duke of York about the list of ships that we propose to sell. And here there attended Mr. Wren the first time, who hath not yet, I think, received the Duke of York's seal and papers. At our coming hither we found the Duke and Duchess all alone at dinner, methought melancholy, or else I thought so from the late occasion of the Chancellor's fall, who, they say, however, takes it very contentedly. Thence I to Whitehall a little, and so took up my wife at the change, and so home and at the office late, and so home to supper and to bed. Our boy ill. The 4th of September. By coach to Whitehall to the council chamber, and there met with Sir William Coventry going in, who took me aside and told me that he was just come from delivering up his seal and papers to Mr. Wren, and told me he must now take his leave of me as a naval man, but that he shall always bear respect to his friends there, and particularly to myself, with great kindness, which I returned to him with thanks, and so with much kindness parted, and he into the council. I met with Sir Samuel Morland, who showed me 2 orders upon the Exchequer, one of £600 and another of £400, for money assigned to him, which he would have me lend him money upon, and he would allow 12%. I would not meddle with them, though they are very good, and I would, had I not so much money out already on public credit. But I see by this his condition will alway be bad. I stayed and heard Alderman Barker's case of his being abused by the Council of Ireland touching his lands there. All I observe there is the silliness of the king playing with his dog all the while, or his codpiece, and not minding the business, and what he said was mighty weak. But my Lord Keeper I observed to be a mighty able man. The business broke off without any end to it, and so I home, and thence with my wife and Will Hewer to Bartholomew Fair, and there saw Policonello, where we saw Mistress Clark and all her crew, and so to a private house, and sent for a side of pig, and ate it at an acquaintance of Will Hewer's, where there were some learned physic and chemical books, and among others a natural herbal, very fine. Here we stayed not, but to the Duke of York's playhouse, and there see Mustapha, which the more I see, the more I like, and is a most admirable poem, and bravely acted. Only both Betterton and Harris could not contain from laughing, in the midst of a most serious part, from the ridiculous mistake of one of the men upon the stage, which I did not like. Thence home, where Batalier and his sister Mary came to us, and sat and talked, and so they gone, we to supper and to bed. The 5th of September. Up and all the morning at the office, where we sat till noon, and then I home to dinner, where Mary Batalier and her brother dined with us, who grows troublesome in his talking so much of his going to Marseille, and what commissions he hath to execute as a factor, and a deal of do of which I am weary. After dinner with Sir William Penn, my wife, and Mary Batalier to the Duke of York's house, and there saw Heraclius, which is a good play, but they did so spoil it with their laughing, and being all of them out, and with the noise they made within the theatre, that I was ashamed of it, and resolved not to come thither again a good while, believing that this negligence, which I never observed before, proceeds only from their want of company in the pit, that they have no care how they act. My wife was ill, and so I was forced to go out of the house with her to Lincoln's Inn Walks, and there in a corner she did her business, and was by and by well. And so into the house again, but sick of their ill acting. So home and to the office, where busy late, then home to supper and to bed. This morning was told by Sir William Batten that he doth hear from Mr. Grey, who hath good intelligence, that our Queen is to go into a nunnery, there to spend her days, and that my Lady Castlemaine is going into France, and is to have a pension of £4,000 a year. This latter I do more believe than the other, it being very wise in her to do it and save all she hath, besides ease the king and kingdom of a burden and reproach. The 6th of September. Up and to Westminster to the Exchequer, and then into the hall, and there bought Gwillem's Heraldry for my wife. And so to the Swan, and thither came Doll Lane, and Yodid Tokar her, and drank, and so away. I took coach and home, where I find my wife gone to Walthamstow by invitation with Sir William Batten. And so I followed, taking up Mistress Turner, and she and I much discourse all the way, touching the baseness of Sir William Penn and sluttishness of his family, and how the world doth suspect that his son Lowther, who is sick of a sore mouth, hath got the pox. So we came to Sir William Batten's, where Sir William Penn and his lady, and we and Mistress Shipman. And here we walked and had an indifferent good dinner, the victuals very good and cleanly dressed, and good linen, but no fine meat at all. After dinner we went up and down the house, and I do like it very well, being furnished with a great deal of very good goods. And here we stayed, I tired with the company, till almost evening, and then took leave, Turner and I together again, and my wife with William Batten. At Aldgate I took my wife into my coach, and so to Bartholomew Fair, and there, it being very dirty, and now night, we saw a poor fellow, whose legs were tied behind his back, dance upon his hands, with his arse above his head, and also dance upon his crutches, without any legs upon the ground to help him, which he did with that pain that I was sorry to see it, and did pity him, and give him money after he had done. Then we to see a piece of clockwork made by an Englishman, indeed very good, wherein all the several states of man's age to 100 year old is shown very pretty and solemn, and several other things more cheerful. And so we ended and took a link, the women resolving to be dirty, and walked up and down to get a coach. And my wife, being a little before me, had been like to be taken up by one whom we saw to be Sam Hartlib. My wife had her vizard on, yet we cannot say that he meant any hurt, for it was as she was just by a coach side, which she had or had a mind to take up. And he asked her, "Madam, do you go in this coach?" But as soon as he saw a man come to her, I know not whether he knew me, but he departed away apace. By and by did get a coach, and so away home, and there to supper, and to bed. The 7th of September. Up and to the office where all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, where good groom was teaching my wife and dined with us. And I did tell him of my intention to learn to trill, which he will not promise I shall obtain, but he will do what can be done, and I am resolved to learn. All the afternoon at the office, and towards night, out by coach with my wife, she to the change, and I to see the price of a copper cistern for the table, which is very pretty, and they demand 6 or 7 pounds for one, but I will have one. Then called my wife at the change, and thence bought a nightgown for my wife, cost but 24 shillings. And so out to Mile End to drink, and so home to the office to end my letters, and so home to supper and to bed. The 8th of September, Lord's Day. Up and walked to St. James's, but there I find Sir William Coventry gone from his chamber, and Mr. Wren not yet come thither. But I up to the Duke of York, and there, after being ready, my Lord Brunker and I had an audience. And thence with my Lord Brunker to Whitehall, and he told me in discourse how that though it is true that Sir William Coventry did long since propose to the Duke of York the leaving his service, as being unable to fulfil it as he should do now he hath so much public business, and that the Duke of York did bid him say nothing of it, but that he would take time to please himself in another to come in his place, yet the Duke of York's doing it at this time, declaring that he hath found out another, and this one of the Chancellor's servants, he cannot but think was done with some displeasure, and that it could not well be otherwise that the Duke of York should keep one in that place that had so eminently opposed him in the defence of his father-in-law, nor could the Duchess ever endure the sight of him, to be sure. But he thinks that the Duke of York and he are parted upon clear terms of friendship. He tells me he doth believe that my Lady Castlemaine is compounding with the King for a pension, and to leave the court, but that her demands are mighty high. But he believes the King is resolved, and so doth everybody else I speak with, to do all possible to please the Parliament, and he doth declare that he will deliver everybody up to them, to give an account of their actions. And that last Friday, it seems, there was an Act of Council passed, to put out all Papists in office, and to keep out any from coming in. I went to the King's Chapel to the closet, and there I hear Cresset sing a tenor part, along with the church music, very handsomely, but so loud that people did laugh at him, as a thing done for ostentation. Here I met Sir George Downing, who would speak with me, and first to inquire what I paid for my kid's leather gloves I had on my hands, and showed me others on his as handsome, as good in all points, cost him but 12 pence a pair, and mine, me, 2 shillings. He told me he had been 7 years finding out a man that could dress English sheepskin as it should be, and indeed it is now as good in all respects as Kidd, and he says will save £100,000 a year that goes out to France for kid skins. Thus he labours very worthily to advance our own trade, but doth it with mighty vanity and talking. But then he told me of our base condition, in the treaty with Holland and France, about our prisoners, that whereas before we did clear one another's prisoners man for man, and we upon the publication of the peace did release all ours, 300 at Leith, and others in other places for nothing, the Dutch do keep theirs and will not discharge them with paying their debts according to the treaty. That his instruments in Holland, writing to our ambassadors about this to Breda, they answer them that they do not know of anything that they have done therein, but left it just as it was before, to which, when they answer that by the treaty their lordships had bound our countrymen to pay their debts in prison, they answer they cannot help it, and we must get them off as cheap as we can. On this score they demand £1,100 for Sir George Askew, and £5,000 for the one province of Zealand, the prisoners that we have therein. He says that this is a piece of shame that never any nation committed, and that our very lords here of the council, when he related this matter to them, did not remember that they had agreed to this article, and swears that all their articles are alike, as the giving away Pulorun, and Suriname, and Nova Scotia, which hath a river 300 miles up the country, with copper mines more than Swedland, and Newcastle coals, the only place in America that hath coals that we know of. And that Cromwell did value these places and would for ever have made much of them, but we have given them away for nothing, besides a debt to the King of Denmark, but which is most of all, they have discharged those very particular demands of merchants of the Guinea Company and others which he, when he was there, had adjusted with the Dutch and come to agreement in writing, and they undertaken to satisfy, and that this was done in black and white under their hands, and yet we have forgiven all these, and not so much as sent to Sir George Downing to know what he had done, or to confer with him about any one point of the treaty, but signed to what they would have, and we here signed to whatever in gross was brought over by Mr. Coventry. And tells me, just in these words, my Lord Chancellor had a mind to keep himself from being questioned by clapping up a peace upon any terms. When I answered that there was other privy councillors to be advised with besides him, and that therefore this whole peace could not be laid to his charge, he answered that nobody durst say anything at the council table but himself, and that the king was as much afeard of saying anything there as the meanest privy councillor, and says more, that at this day the king, in familiar talk, doth call the chancellor that insolent man, and says that he would not let him speak himself in council, which is very high, and doth show that the chancellor is like to be in a bad state, unless he can defend himself better than people think. And yet Creed tells me that he doth hear that my Lord Cornbury doth say his father doth long for the coming of the Parliament, in order to his own vindication more than any one of his enemies. And here it comes into my head to set down what Mr. Rawlinson, whom I met in Fenchurch Street on Friday last, looking over his ruins there, told me, that he was told by one of my Lord Chancellor's gentlemen lately that a grant coming to him to be sealed, wherein the king hath given her, or somebody by her means, a place which he did not like well of, he did stop the grant, saying that he thought this woman would sell everything shortly, which she, hearing of, she sent to let him know that she had disposed of this place, and did not doubt in a little time to dispose of his. This, Rawlinson doth tell me, my Lord Chancellor's own gentleman did tell him himself. Thence, meeting Creed, I with him to the park, there to walk a little, and to the Queen's Chapel and hear their music, which I liked in itself pretty well as to the composition, but their voices are very harsh and rough, that I thought it was some instruments they had that made them sound so. So to Whitehall and saw the King and Queen at dinner, and observed, which I never did before, the formality, but it is but a formality, of putting a bit of bread wiped upon each dish into the mouth of every man that brings a dish, but it should be in the sauce. Here were some Russes come to see the King at dinner, among others the interpreter, a comely Englishman in the envoy's own clothes, which the envoy, it seems in vanity, did send to show his fine clothes upon this man's back, which is one, it seems, of a comelier presence than himself. And yet it is said that none of their clothes are their own, but taken out of the king's own wardrobe, and which they dare not bring back dirty or spotted, but clean, or are in danger of being beaten, as they say, insomuch that Sir Charles Cotterell says, when they are to have an audience, they never venture to put on their clothes till he appears to come to fetch them, and as soon as ever they come home, put them off again. To Sir George Carteret's to dinner, where Mr. Cofferer Ashburnham, who told of a good story of a prisoner's being condemned at Salisbury for a small matter, while he was on the bench with his father-in-law, Judge Richardson, and while they were considering to transport him to save his life, the fellow flung a great stone at the judge, that missed him but broke through the wainscot. Upon this he had his hand cut off and was hanged presently. Here was a gentleman, one Shears, one come lately from my Lord Sandwich with an express. But, Lord, I was almost ashamed to see him, lest he should know that I have not yet wrote one letter to my Lord since his going. I had no discourse with him, but after dinner Sir George Carteret and I to talk about some business of his, and so I to Mistress Martin, where was Mistress Burrows, and also fine Mistress Noble, my partner in the christening of Martin's child, did come to see it. And there we sat and talked an hour, and then all broke up, and I by coach home, and there find Mr. Pelling and Howe, and we to sing, and good music till late, and then to supper, and Howe lay at my house, and so after supper to bed with much content, only my mind a little troubled at my late breach of vows, which, however, I will pay my forfeits, though the badness of my eyes making me unfit to read or write long is my excuse, and doth put me upon other pleasures and employment, which I should refrain from in observation of my vows. The 9th of September. Up into the office where all the morning, and at noon comes Creed to dine with me. After dinner he and I and my wife to the Bear Garden to see a prize fought there, but coming too soon I left them there and went on by water to Whitehall, and there did some business with the Lords of the Treasury, and here do hear by Thomas Killigrew and Mr. Prodgers that for certain news is come of Harmon's having spoilt 19 of 22 French ships, somewhere about the Barbados, I think they said, but wherever it is a good service and very welcome. Here I fell in talk with Thomas Killigrew about music, and he tells me that he will bring me to the best music in England, of which indeed he is master, and that is two Italians and Mistress Yates, who, he says, is come to sing the Italian manner as well as ever he heard any. Says that Nip won't take pains enough, but that she understands her part so well upon the stage that no man nor woman in the house doth the like. Thence I by water to the Bear Garden, where now the yard was full of people, and those most of them seamen, striving by force to get in, that I was afeard to be seen among them, but got into the alehouse, and so a back way was put into the bull house, where I stood a good while all alone among the bulls, and was afeard I was among the bears too. But by and by the door opened, and I got into the common pit, and there, with my cloak about my face, I stood and saw the prize fought till one of them, a shoemaker, was so cut in both his wrists that he could not fight any longer, and then they broke off. His enemy was a butcher. The sport very good, and various humours to be seen among the rabble that is there. Thence carried Creed to Whitehall, and there my wife and I took coach and home, and both of us to Sir William Batten's to invite them to dinner on Wednesday next, having a whole buck come from Hampton Court, by the warrant which Sir Stephen Fox did give me. And so home to supper and to bed, after a little playing on the flageolet with my wife, who doth outdo thereon whatever I expected of her. The 10th of September. Up and all the morning at the office, where little to do but bemoan ourselves under the want of money, and indeed little is or can be done for want of money, we having not now received one penny for any service in many weeks, and none in view to receive, saving for paying of some seamen's wages. At noon, sent to by my Lord Brunker to speak with him, and it was to dine with him and his Lady Williams, which I have not now done in many months at their own table, and Mr. Wren, who is come to dine with them the first time he hath been at the office since his being the Duke of York's secretary. Here we sat and ate and talked, and of some matters of the office. But his discourse is yet but weak in that matter, and no wonder, he being new in it. But I fear he will not go about understanding with the impatience that Sir William Coventry did. Having dined, I away and with my wife and Mercer, set my wife down at the Change, and the other at Whitehall, and I to St. James's, where we all met and did our usual weekly business with the Duke of York. But, Lord, methinks both he and we are mighty flat and dull over what we used to be, when William Coventry was among us. Thence I into St. James's Park, and there met Mr. Povey, and he and I to walk an hour or more in the Pall Mall, talking of the times. He tells me, among other things, that this business of the Chancellor doth breed a kind of inward distance between the King and the Duke of York, and that it cannot be avoided. For though the latter did at first move it through his folly, yet he is made to see that he is wounded by it, and is become much a less man than he was, and so will be. But he tells me that they are, and have always been, great dissemblers one towards another, and that their parting heretofore in France is never to be thoroughly reconciled between them. He tells me that he believes there is no such thing like to be as a composition with my Lady Castlemaine, and that she shall be got out of the way before the Parliament comes. For, he says, she is as high as ever she was, though he believes the King is as weary of her as is possible, and would give anything to remove her. But he is so weak in his passion that he dare not do it. that he doth believe that my Lord Chancellor will be doing some acts in the Parliament which shall render him popular, and that there are many people now do speak kindly of him that did not before, but that if he doth do this, it must provoke the King and the party that removed him. He seems to doubt what the King of France will do in case an accommodation shall be made between Spain and him, for Flanders, for then he will have nothing more easy to do with his army than to subdue us. Parted with him at Whitehall, and there I took coach, and took up my wife and Mercer, and so home, and I to the office where ended my letters, and then to my chamber with my boy to lay up some papers and things that lay out of order against tomorrow, to make it clean against the feast that I'm to have. Here Mr. Pelling came to sit with us and talked of music and the musicians of the town, and so to bed after supper. The 11th of September. Up and with Mr. Gordon to the Exchequer. By the way, he tells me this day he is to be answered whether he must hold sheriff or no, for he would not hold unless he may keep it at his office, which is out of the city, and so my Lord Mayor must come with his sword down whenever he comes thither, which he doth because he cannot get a house fit for him in the city, or else he will fine for it. Among others that they have in nomination for sheriff, one is little Chaplin, who was his servant, and a very young man to undergo that place. But as the city is now, there is no great honour nor joy to be had in being a public officer. At the Exchequer I looked after my business, and when done, went home to the change, and there bought a case of knives for dinner, and a dish of fruit of 5 shillings, and bespoke other things, and then home. And here I find all things in good order, and a good dinner towards. Anon comes Sir William Batten, and his lady, and Mr. Griffith, their ward, and Sir William Penn and his lady, and Mistress Lowther, who is grown, either through pride or want of manners, a fool, having not a word to say almost all dinner, and, as a further mark of a beggarly proud fool, hath a bracelet of diamonds and rubies about her wrist, and a sixpenny necklace about her neck, and not one good rag of clothes upon her back. And Sir John Chichley in their company, and Mistress Turner. Here I had an extraordinary good and handsome dinner for them, better than any of them deserve or understand, saving Sir John Chichley and Mistress Turner, and not much mirth, only what I by discourse made, and that against my genius. After dinner I took occasion to break up the company as soon as I could, and all parted. Sir William Batten and I by water to Whitehall, there to speak with the commissioners of the Treasury, who are mighty earnest for our hastening all that may be the paying off of the seamen, now there is money, and are considering many other things for easing of charge, which I'm glad of, but vexed to see that John Duncombe should be so pressing in it, as if none of us had like care with him. Having done there, I by coach to the Duke of York's playhouse, and there saw part of The Ungrateful Lovers, and sat by Beck Marshall, who is very handsome near hand. Here I met Mistress Turner and my wife as we agreed, and together home, and there my wife and I part of the night at the Flageolet, which she plays now anything upon almost, at first sight and in good time. But here came Mr. Moore, and sat and discoursed with me of public matters, the sum of which is that he doth doubt that there is more at the bottom than the removal of the Chancellor. That is, he doth verily believe that the King doth resolve to declare the Duke of Monmouth legitimate, and that we shall soon see it. This I do not think the Duke of York will endure without blows, but his poverty, and being lessened by having the Chancellor fallen, and William Coventry gone from him, will disable him from being able to do anything almost, he being himself almost lost in the esteem of people, and will be more and more, unless my Lord Chancellor, who is already begun to be pitied by some people, and to be better thought of than was expected, doth recover himself in Parliament. He would seem to fear that this difference about the crown, if there be nothing else, will undo us. He doth say that it is very true that my Lord did lately make some stop of some grants of £2,000 a year to my Lord Grandison, which was only in his name for the use of my Lady Castlemaine's children, and that this did incense her, and she did speak very scornful words, and sent a scornful message to him about it. He gone after supper, I to bed, being mightily pleased with my wife's playing so well upon the flageolet. and I'm resolved she shall learn to play upon some instrument, for though her ear be bad, yet I see she will attain anything to be done by her hand. The 12th of September. Up and at the office all the morning till almost noon, and then I rose from the office, which I've not done 5 times, I think, since I come thither, and to the Exchequer for some tallies for Tangier, and that being done, to the Dog Tavern, and there I spent 1/2 a piece upon the clerks, and so away, and I to Mistress Martin's, but she not at home, but stayed and drunk with her sister and landlady, and by that time it was time to go to a play, which I did to the Duke of York's house, where Tu Quoque was the first time acted, with some alterations of Sir William Davenant's. But the play is a very silly play, methinks, for I and others that sat by me, Mr. Povey and Mr. Prodgers, were weary of it, but it will please the citizens. My wife also was there, I having sent for her to meet me there, and Will Hewers. After the play, we home, and there I to the office, and dispatched my business, and then home, and mightily pleased with my wife's playing on the flageolet, she taking out any tune almost at first sight and keeping time to it, which pleases me mightily. So, to supper and to bed. The 13th of September. Called up by people come to deliver in 10 children of Coles, brought in one of our prizes from Newcastle, the rest we intend to sell, we having above 10 children between us. They sell at about 28 or 29 shillings per children, but Sir William Batten hath sworn that he was a cuckold that sells under 30 shillings, and that makes us lay up all but what we have for our own spending, which is very pleasant, for I believe we shall be glad to sell them for less. To the office, and there dispatch business till 10 o'clock, and then with Sir William Batten and my wife and Mistress Turner to Walthamstow by hackney coach to Mistress Shipman's to dinner, where Sir William Penn and my lady and Mistress Lowther, the latter of which hath got a sore nose, given her, I believe, from her husband, which made me I could not look upon her with any pleasure, and here a very good and plentiful wholesome dinner, and above all thing, such plenty of milk meats, she keeping a great dairy, and so good as I never met with. Afternoon proved very foul weather, the morning fair. We stayed talking till evening, and then home, and there to my flageolet with my wife, and so to bed without any supper, my belly being full and dinner not digested. It vexed me to hear how Sir William Penn, who came alone from London, being to send his coachman for his wife and daughter, and bidding his coachman in much anger to go for them, he being vexed like a rogue to do anything to please his wife, his coachman Tom was heard to say, "A pox of God rot her! Can she not walk hither?" These words do so mad me that I could find in my heart to give him or my lady notice of them. The 14th of September. Up and to the office, where all the morning busy. At noon comes Mr. Pierce, and dined with me to advise about several matters of his, relating to the office and his purse. And here he told me that the King and Duke of York, and the whole court, is mighty joyful at the Duchess of York's being brought to bed this day, or yesterday, of a son, which will settle men's minds mightily. And he tells me that he doth think that what the King doth, of giving the Duke of Monmouth the command of his guards, and giving my Lord Gerald £12,000 for it, is merely to find an employment for him upon which he may live, and not out of any design to bring him into any title to the crown, which Mr. Moore did the other day put me into great fear of. After dinner, he gone, my wife and I to the King's Playhouse to see The Northern Lass, which I think I never did see before. Nip acted it, and did her part very extraordinary well, but the play is but a mean, sorry play, but the house, very full of gallants. It seems it hath not been acted a good while. Thence to the Exchange for something for my wife, and then home and to the office, and then home to our flageolet and so to bed, being mightily troubled in mind at the liberty I give myself of going to plays, upon pretence of the weakness of my eyes that cannot continue so long together at work at my office. But I must remedy it. The 15th of September. Lord's Day. Up to my chamber, there to set some papers to rights, by and by to church, where I stood in continual fear of Mistress Markham's coming to church and offering to come into our pew, to prevent which, as soon as ever I heard the great door open, I did step back and clapped my breech to our pew door, that she might be forced to shove me to come in. But as God would have it, she did not come. Mr. Mills preached, and after sermon, by invitation, he and his wife came to dine with me, which is the first time they have been in my house, I think, these 5 years, I thinking it not amiss, because of their acquaintance in our country, to show them some respect. Mr. Turner and his wife and their son, the captain, dined with me, and I had a very good dinner for them, and very merry, and after dinner he was forced to go, though it rained, to Stepney to preach. We also to church, and then home, and there comes Mr. Pelling with 2 men by promise, one Wallington and Piggott, the former whereof, being a very little fellow, did sing a most excellent bass, and yet a poor fellow, a working goldsmith that goes without gloves to his hands. Here we sung several good things, but I am more and more confirmed that singing with many voices is not singing, but a sort of instrumental music, the sense of the words being lost by not being heard, and especially as they set them with fugues of words, one after another, whereas singing properly, I think, should be but with 1 or 2 voices at most, and that counterpoint. They supped with me and so broke up, and then my wife and I to my chamber, where through the badness of my eyes she was forced to read to me, which she doth very well, and was Mr. Boyle's discourse upon the style of the Scripture, which is a very fine piece. And so to bed. The 16th of September. Up and several came to me, among others Mr. Yeebsley of Plymouth, to discourse about their matters touching Tangier, and by and by Sir Hugh Chumley, who was with me a good while, who tells me that the Duke of York's child is christened, the Duke of Albemarle and the Marquis of Worcester godfathers, and my Lady Suffolk godmother, and they have named it Edgar, which is a brave name. But it seems they are more joyful in the Chancellor's family at the birth of this prince than in wisdom they should, for fear it should give the king cause of jealousy. Sir Hugh Chumley doth not seem to think there is any such thing can be found in the king's intention as that of raising the Duke of Monmouth to the crown, though he thinks there may possibly be some persons that would, and others that would be glad to have the queen removed to some monastery or somewhere or other, to make room for a new wife, for they will all be unsafe under the Duke of York. He says the king and parliament will agree, that is, that the king will do anything that they will have him. We together to the Exchequer about our Tangier orders, and so parted at the New Exchange, where I stayed reading Mistress Philip's poems, till my wife and Mercer called me to Mistress Pierce's by invitation to dinner, where I find her painted, which makes me loathe her, and the nastiest poor dinner that made me sick. Only here I met with a fourth advice to the painter, upon the coming in of the Dutch to the river, and end of the war, that made my heart ache to read it, it being too sharp and so true. Here I also saw a printed account of the examinations taking, touching the burning of the city of London, showing the plots of the papists therein, which it seems hath been ordered and hath been burnt by the hands of the hangman in Westminster Palace. I will try to get one of them. After dinner she showed us her closet, which is pretty with her James's picture, done by Hales, but with a mighty bad hand, which is his great fault, that he doth do negligently, and the drapery also not very good. Being tired of being here, and sick of their damned sluttish dinner, my wife and Mercer and I away to the King's Playhouse to see the Scornful Lady, but it being now 3 o'clock, there was not one soul in the pit, whereupon, for shame, we would not go in, but against our wills went all to see Tu Quoque again, where there is pretty store of company, and going with a prejudice, the play appeared better to us. Here we saw Madam Morland, who is grown mighty fat, but is very comely. But one of the best parts of our sport was a mighty pretty lady that sat behind us, that did laugh so heartily and constantly that it did me good to hear her. Thence to the King's House upon a wager of mine with my wife that there would be no acting there today, there being no company. So I went in and found a pretty good company there, and saw their dance at the end of the play, and so to the coach again and to the Cock Ale House, and there drank in our coach, and so home, and I to the office, and then home, and my wife read to me as last night, and so to bed, vexed with our dinner today, and myself more with being convinced that Mistress Pierce paints, so that henceforth, to be sure, I shall loathe her. The 17th of September. Up and at the office all the morning, where Mr. Wren came to us and sat with us, only to learn, and doth intend to come once or twice a week and sit with us. In the afternoon I walked to the Old Swan, the way mighty dirty, and there called at Mitchell's, and there had opportunity para quis su mujer, but ella did receive it with a great deal of seeming regret, which did vex me. But, however, I do not doubt overcoming her, as I did the mujer of the Menusier at Deptford. So thence by water to Westminster to Burgess, and there did receive my orders for £15,000 more for Tangier. Thence to the hall, and there talked a little with Mistress Mitchell, and so to Mistress Martin's to pay for my cuffs and drink with her, and did hacer la cosa with her. And by and by, away by coach, and met with Sir Hugh Chumley, and with him to the Temple, and there, in Playford's shop, did give him some of my exchequer orders, and took his receipts, and so parted, and home, and there to my business, hard at the office. And then home, my wife being at Mistress Turner's, who, and her husband, came home with her, and here stayed and talked, and stayed late, and then went away, and we to bed. But that which vexed me much this evening is that Captain Cock and Sir William Batten did come to me and sat and drank a bottle of wine, and told me how Sir William Penn hath got an order for the Flying Greyhound for himself, which is so false a thing, and the part of a knave as nothing almost can be more. This vexed me, but I resolved to bring it before the Duke and try a pull for it. The 18th of September. Up betimes and to Captain Cock in his coach, which he sent for me, and he not being ready, I walked in the Exchange, which is now made pretty by having windows and doors before all their shops, to keep out the cold. By and by, to him, and he being ready, he and I out in his coach to my Lord Chancellor's, there to Mr. Wren's chamber, who did tell us the whole of Sir William Penn's having the order for this ship of ours, and we went with him to St. James's, and there I did see the copy of it, which is built upon a suggestion of his, having given the king a ship of his, the Prosperous, wherein is such a cheat as I have the best advantage in the world over him, and will make him do reason, or lay him on his back. This I was very glad of, and having done as far as I could in it, we returned, and I home, and there at the office all the morning, and at noon with my Lord Brunker to the Treasurer's office to look over the clerks, who were there making up the books, but in such a manner as it is a shame to see. Then home to dinner, and after dinner my mind mighty full of this business of Sir William Penn's, to the office, and there busy all the afternoon. This evening Sir William Batten and William Penn and I met at William Batten's house, and there I took an opportunity to break the business, at which William Penn is much disturbed, and would excuse it the most he can, but doth it so basely that though he do offer to let go his pretence to her, and resign up his order for her, and come in, only to ask his share of her, which doth very well please me, and gives me present satisfaction, yet I shall remember him for a knave while I live. But thus my mind is quieted for the present, more than I thought I should be, and I'm glad that I shall have no need of bidding him open defiance, which I would otherwise have done, and made a perpetual war between us. So to the office, and there busy pretty late, and so home, and to supper with my wife, and so to bed.